Ms. Campos.
All right, well, thanks everyone for coming. I know it's getting late in the conference on a Wednesday afternoon, and there's a lot of celebrating to be done with the colleagues after the conference this year. But I'm here, I'm going to be discussing some of the research that Emily Heaton and I have been working on to compare the difference in rhizome and plug-propagated miscanthus in Iowa. Just a brief introduction. We've been hearing all week about bioenergy and why people are working on bioenergy and everything like that. But basically, there's been an increased interest in these biofuels, and this has led to an investigation for bioenergy feedstocks to feed into this biofuel production. Among these biomass feedstocks, Miscanthus giganteus specifically has emerged as a front runner in comparison to other potential feedstocks for the Midwest, especially. The problem with Miscanthus giganteus, or the disadvantage, I guess, or the challenge with Miscanthus giganteus is that it is a sterile hybrid, which requires all the propagation to be done vegetatively, which predominantly is being done by rhizome systems. But what we've found is stem propagation is also possible, which is similar to the way sugarcane is propagated and established. This is just a figure of some Miscanthus giganteus stem propagation that we've done in the greenhouse. And you can see from each stem, or a lot of the stems, there's a new shoot emerging that we could then carries on to be a plug that you can transplant into the field. So the opportunity that we see with stem propagation is that there are some advantages of this system over a rhizome propagation system in that we don't have the soil disruption from the harvest of the material like you do with rhizomes, where you have to go in and dig up the entire stand, which sets back the parent stand quite a bit. Therefore, we're able to maintain the parent stand because we're just cutting down the above ground material, not digging everything out of the ground. Also, we feel there's a higher potential multiplication factor with this system. And what I mean by that is the number of new plants I can generate from a single beginning plant. This arises, or stems, no pun intended, from the fact that each stem has several node segments, and each plant may have anywhere from 40 upwards of, we've seen plants with over 100 stems on a single plant, and up to 15 to 16 nodes per stem. So each of these nodes has an associate axillary bud, which is able to sprout into a new tiller or a new shoot, and eventually leads to a plug that we can transplant. Hopefully soon you'll be able to read a little bit more about this stem propagation in a publication we have in review right now, Emily and I. So keep an eye out for that if you're interested. I just want to describe this stem propagation and establishment system a little bit further to put the research that I'm going to be talking about in a bigger context, in a bigger system. So as I've mentioned, you would start with an established field of Miscanthus. This is a first-year stand shown here. What you can then do is go through and cut this material down, cut the above-ground material off, and end up with single stems, which you can then section into single node segments, which can then be planted into cell packs, generate stem-propagated plugs that you can then transplant into the field. And if you want to, you can think of this as a cyclical process because you just reestablish a new field that you can then harvest material from again and again. The aspect of this system that I'm going to be talking about is the once we've done the transplanting, how that established plot performs relative to the traditional rhizome propagation system. So what we don't know about this system is how these stem-propagated plugs will perform once they get to the field, because it's not going to make any difference if we can create a million plants by this method, and once we bring them all to the field, they don't yield very well. So we wanted to have a look at that, how they perform in the field in terms of yield. And also we wanted to look at the morphology of these plants. What we've seen from literature in Europe, when they've tried to do the micropropagation with Miscanthus giganteus, they had plants that looked a lot different in terms of morphology, and this had an effect on yield. So we wanted to take a look at that as well. So our objectives were essentially to answer these unknown parts of this system, to characterize the morphological differences between the two propagation techniques and to determine if this had any effect on yield or if there was an effect of propagation type on yield in Iowa. The plant material we used were, we used rhizomes that were dug from Caveney Farm in Monticello, Illinois, and we acquired plugs from Speedling Incorporated in Sun City, Florida. All of the material did originate from the same field at Caveney Farm in Illinois. It was just whether it was shipped through Florida in a propagation in Florida, or if we took the rhizomes directly from the Caveney Farm. So all of the miscanthus that we used for this trial were the Illinois clone. We did this as a field trial with three locations in Iowa. It's kind of hard to see the outline of Iowa, but it's there, and those yellow plugs there indicate the three locations. They were in northwest, central, and southwest Iowa. At each location, we replicated each propagation type four times. So we had, at a single site, we had eight plots. Four plots were rhizome propagated, and four plots were stem-propagated plugs that we transplanted in. We arranged this in a completely randomized design because each of our locations was pretty uniform. We also planted the material on an equal spacing grid, like we always plant miscanthus in our trials. We did a 30-inch row spacing between and within rows, and the reason we planted in this manner is because it allows allows us to take advantage of the rhizomatous growth habit of miscanthus because it likes to spread out and take up that space. It also lets us plant a little bit less material per unit area when we plant in this equal spacing. Another thing I didn't think of, but I'm just remembering now, is it also allows us to have a little bit easier weed control. If we want to do it mechanically, we can cultivate in both directions. And if you're really good at planting straight, you could probably even go diagonal. So the measurements we took to analyze the morphology, we looked at plant heights, and Zeeb and I worked in pretty close collaboration with doing some of these measurements, so you might recognize some of the photos. We took stem diameters as well. We did the basal circumference measurements. We did stage and tiller counts and leaf width measurements. We also did a hand harvest, and we utilized the same work crew. So you can see Pablo there as a model for our hand harvesting with the rice knives. We dried the above ground samples and analyzed for dry matter yields. The results, this is from the first establishment year. So we started these plots in 2009, and this is from the 2009 growing season. You can see pretty clear morphological differences between the two propagation types. The stem propagated plugs are in the foreground. Try to get the mouse here. These are the stem propagated plug plot, and behind it is a rhizome propagated plot. We did see some yield differences in the first season, but we weren't overly surprised by this because it was the establishment year, and the yields tend to be pretty variable in the establishment year regardless. So we wanted to continue on and have a look at what these plots were, how they were performing in a year when you would actually take yields or take a harvest from these plots. So everything from here on out is actually from the second growing season, from the 2010 growing season, in a year where you would take a harvest from these plots. I'm going to start with the plant height morphological differences. I just want to explain in these next few slides, if you want to compare between rhizomes and plugs, you should pay attention to the lines that are the same colors. It's a little bit difficult to see the marks here, but if you compare within the same color, the boxes indicate rhizomes and the triangles indicate plugs. So what we can see from this figure here are that on average across sites, rhizomes, which is this line here, for instance, were consistently taller than the plug-propagated plots. And this was consistent among sites, although at some sites, like the Northwest site, it was a little less pronounced. And this was a highly significant difference. Stem diameter, we also saw differences between plugs and rhizomes, with the rhizomes producing a thicker stem on average. If you watch this orange line here, which was the southwest location, it's a little bit easier to see. This was another highly significant difference between rhizomes and plugs. Tiller count per plant, we also saw a difference. In this case, though, it was a little bit reversed. Plug-propagated plants tended to produce more tillers per plant than rhizome plants. And this was especially pronounced at the Hines Research Farm. And you can notice this spike right here. As Zeb mentioned, we had a flood. We're both at the same farm in central Iowa. And these plots were 2 feet underwater for, a few days. So if you're wondering how Miscanthus might react to adverse conditions, it produced a lot more tillers once it got that flood water on it. And not only did it produce more tillers, but it also spread out a lot more, which you can see from this figure where we looked at the basal circumference of the plant. And again, rhizomes had tended to have more of a spread on average than plugs did, although at the central farm where it's a sandier soil, they had pretty much a similar basal circumference. But here again, you can really see the impact of what a flood can do on the growth habit of Miscanthus giganteus. So just to summarize the morphology work we did, in the second season, rhizome plants tended to produce taller plants that had thicker stems and had more of a spread, whereas plug plots, although they had shorter tillers, tended to produce more tillers and just didn't spread out quite as much, almost more of a bunch type. So how did this impact yield? That's the real question. When you're growing a biomass crop, the number one question you ask about is what it yielded. So how did these morphological differences impact yield? And if you read the title of my presentation, you would know that they were similar between plugs and rhizomes. So although we saw a lot of morphological differences between these two propagation types, in the end, the yields were the same. So it's almost as if they were able to absorb or to utilize a certain amount of energy, and how they partitioned that energy in the above ground material was slightly different, but it was the same amount of energy that they absorbed or utilized and produced the same amount of above ground biomass. I do have below ground biomass work, but I haven't gotten to analyzing yet, so it'll be kind of interesting to see if we also had a similar below ground biomass as well. So to summarize the answers to the unknown, or what we've figured out so far about characterizing the system, is that plugs do perform as well as rhizomes in the field when it comes to yield, although they do have a different morphology. So to conclude, if you do have a decision, as more and more people are starting to plant Miscanthus, they have an option to plant plugs or rhizomes. There are companies that produce plugs, there's companies that produce rhizomes, and you have a choice. And so I guess for farmers in Iowa, if they're concerned about which type to plant because they're afraid of the yield differences, in the second season, according to what I've done so far, they won't have to worry about yields. And they could probably make their decision based more upon the economics for them, what their personal preference is for planting material, the equipment they have, and the availability of the different propagules. So with that, I'd just like to acknowledge the people that have made this research possible. A couple people I forgot to list when I was sitting there thinking earlier is Pablo, who you saw doing the harvest, and our statistician consultant, Carl Pasternak. So with that, I'll say thank you and answer any questions you might have. Yep.
Well, I guess I have kind of a suite of questions.
Okay.
I'm kind of wrong with this, but one on the production system, you're taking those canes green?
Yep.
Is that correct?
Yep.
I saw that, I'm just kind of wondering in terms of long-term impacts on that by taking that green material. I was also curious if a puzzle, perhaps you were showing stem size that's actually decreasing over time.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you can comment on that. Do you expect this a long-term impact on morphological effects?
Okay.
This is year two or whatever.
Yep.
Do you expect it in year three or year four? And then a final question related to that, and it feeds back to feedstock quality.
Okay.
Does it lead to stem ratio?
Sure. Okay. So the first question.
You answered the first one. That was all.
Okay, good. Okay. Okay. Okay, so for the work I've done personally with the stem propagation, I've been using greenhouse-grown material, and I haven't done any long-term studies with taking it from the field and actually planting it and seeing what the... I mean, I know what you're saying. You're removing a lot of nutrients because we're harvesting it green. There'd probably have to be some different management strategies to maintain that stand over time because you are taking a lot of nitrogen and nutrients off the stand because we are harvesting green.
But you don't see, I mean, when you do that, I've heard people say taking a cut, unlike switchgrass, if you take a cut, say, mid-season or something like that, it can have deleterious effects on the skin productivity.
Oh, I would definitely agree with that, for sure, yeah. Unless you were able to come by and supplement some of the things you've taken off to maintain its productivity in the future. And then the third question?
I was asking about leaf stem ratios and the life.
Okay, so I do have the leaf to stem ratio information. I didn't report it here. I should have. I was just looking at that right before I came and didn't get it into my figures. But that was something I was considering as well. I figured the plug plots tended to have more tillers that were shorter. You'd almost expect them to be leafier. But when I started looking at the leaf to stem ratio in terms of masses, they were actually not any different than the rhizome plots. And then I think you asked about the decreasing stem diameters. That's something we've been consistently seeing in our stem diameter measurements. And as far as we can tell, it's because of the amount of leaf sheath that's around the stem. And as it extends out, the amount of leaf sheath that's around the actual stem is thinning out. So that's our thought on that anyway. The same. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I'm sorry. I forgot to address that part. This was the second year data. We've completed all these measurements. This is the last week was the last week we did these measurements for this season. So we do have the third year season data that we'll hopefully be putting into a publication sooner than later. I've been using my little pivot table and trying to look at it over time, and it does look like some of these differences are diluting out in the third season, but some of them are maintaining, especially height is one that seems to be maintained. The basal circumference seems to be becoming more similar between the two, but I haven't gotten through all the data yet, but I will have 3 years of data, and if I'd like to get four, but I'm supposed to be graduating next year, so we'll see what happens. Weed control for miscanthus in the first season, and I've done miscanthus agronomy talks in the past, I'll just say it's challenging. And it's essential. Don't get behind on it. If you get behind, I have a site that's 3 hours away. I didn't get there for a couple few weeks in the spring, and it was like you couldn't tell there's any miscanthus there. But once you've gotten it to the point where the plants are actually spreading out into the space, the weediness between the two plots isn't really different. One thing I will say about weed control for the different types, propagation types, if you're going to do cultivation or mechanical weed harvest or weed control, it's a lot easier to do it in the plug plots versus the rhizome plots because the timing of when you need to go through and cultivate in the plug plots, you have all your plugs there and you can see where you need to drive the tractor to cultivate, whereas in the rhizome plots, a lot of the rhizomes stay below ground for quite a while, and so it's really difficult to know where to go to do your mechanical weed control. So we've kind of become a little bit more friendly with herbicides. Can you repeat that one more time?
Right. Sorry, I was asking about the propagation rate of the plugs compared to the rhizome.
Oh, you mean like how well they come up?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, okay. I do have some of that data because since these were our research plots, we wanted to make sure that they were completely filled in. And so the number of plants we needed to replace is basically is what you're asking about, I'd say, per plot. It depended a little bit on the location, it seemed like, but I haven't done any statistical analysis. It seemed like in the Northwest, where it's a little bit cooler, it seemed like we were replacing more rhizomes, actually, than plugs. And I don't know if it's because the cooler soil, the rhizomes just didn't want to come up out of the soil or what it was, but the trend was kind of reversed when we went to the Southwest plot, where it seemed like we were replacing more plugs than rhizomes, and it might have been because it was a little bit drier down there. So something else to know about planting plugs is you need to keep them watered because they do tend to dry out pretty quickly. So.
One last question.
I did, yeah, we did. For my below ground biomass, I didn't report any of the yields yet. We did separate rhizomes from root material, and it's a lot of fun. So. I'm not sure yet. The separations take so long, we're still in the process of getting some of them done. So I am really interested to see, because the total above ground yield between the two types seem to be similar. So it's going to be pretty interesting to see if the below ground yields below ground are going to be similar as well. So.